Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome. It's nice to have your company on this Monday evening for the Irish programme Live on Era. With me, Ger Sweeney, as that man just said on Talk Radio Europe. I do hope that you've had a good week since we last spoke. And let's hope that the next hour or thereabouts will bring some things to brighten up this particular Monday for you. So what's coming up on the programme today? If you are familiar with the Presentation Sisters in Ireland, and indeed other parts of the world as well, they were formed by a lady by the name of Nan O'Nagle from County Cork. And there's a new book after being published in relation to Nan O'Nagle. And I'll be talking to one of the authors of that, Catherine Nolan Roebuck. And she'll be telling us all about what's in that book. So you never know, you may have been educated yourself by the Presentation Sisters and there might be something of interest in there for you. Former Ambassador to Ireland, José Antonio Iturriaga, will be joining me to talk to me about his 5 years in Ireland. And he got to see and do quite a lot in those 5 years. So we'll find out more about it a little later on. The contact information, if you would like to get in touch with the programme at any stage, I would like to hear from you. You can email me at ger, G-E-R, at talkradioeurope.com. It's as simple as that. And can I just say good afternoon or good evening at this stage to two people who did that during the week, Andrew MacDonald. And as the name might suggest, there is some Scottish blood in there as well. But he got in touch after last week's programme to say that he was particularly interested in listening to Patricia Traynor talk about the flight of the Earls and various things like that. And he himself is carving out a new world here in Spain. We wish you the very best of luck, you and your partner, Andrew, in that. I know that you're back and forth from the UK at the moment still, like many people who reside in Spain on part of the year. Francis Higgins, who has relations or has blood back in County Sligo. He got in touch as well. Francis, thank you. Good to hear from you and glad to know that you were listening to the programme. He spoke in his email about an ancestor called John Higgins who came to Spain in and around 1678 or thereabouts. And I will be checking him out on Wikipedia as you suggested, Francis. So thanks a million for getting in touch. Nice to hear from you. The email address is, again, is ger, G-E-R, at talkradioeurope.com. No, we haven't done one of these. Oh, sorry. Peter O'Dwyer is going to join us as well, obviously, to talk to us about a very exciting 24 hours in the Brexit Ireland story, and we'll have more on that a little later on. As I said, we didn't do this in quite a while, but we like to check back at former Irish entries to the Eurovision Song Contest. And if you've been listening to the programme, you'll know that we've already done up as far as 1976. So it's the turn of 1977. It was the 22nd Eurovision Song Contest that year, and it was held in London on the 7th of May 1977. Angela Rippon presented that particular Eurovision Song Contest. It was won by France, a lady by the name of Marie Marianne, and she sang a song called Les yeux et l'enfant, which was The Bird and the Child. I don't remember it. I don't, but there you go. Ireland. Let's talk about Ireland. You may remember when we spoke about 1975, we played the Swarbrick brothers, Jimmy and Tommy Swarbrick. That's what friends are for. They went back to the Eurovision Song Contest and they brought two with them. And so they were known as the Swarbricks plus two. So you had Jimmy and Tommy Swarbrick and the plus two were Nicola Kerr and Alma Carroll. And they represented us in the 1977 Eurovision Song Contest. There were 18 participants that year. And they sang a song called It's Nice to Be in Love Again. They came third on 119 points. So, kicking us off music-wise today, the Swarbricks plus two from 1977. And it's nice to be in love again.
It's love. It's nice to be in love again. That old familiar feeling when you meet your girl and the world stands still. Your heart is filled with sweet melody. It's nice to be in love again.
Smile is true. I couldn't believe it. I had know it's love. It's nice to be in love again. That old familiar feeling when you meet your girl and the world stands still. Your heart is filled with sweet melody. It's nice to be in love again. It's nice to be in love again. That old familiar feeling when you meet your girl and the world stands still. Your heart is filled with sweet melody. It's nice to be in love again.
There you have it. It's nice to be in love again. The 1977 Irish Eurovision Song Contest entry. And as I told you, it was the Swarbriggs plus two, Jimmy and Tommy Swarbrick, Nicola Kerr and Alma Carroll, that came third on 119 points. So there we have it. Right. Going to take a very short break. Come back to me just after that. And I will be talking to Catherine Nolan Roebuck about her book that she co-authored in relation to Nano Nagel.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Air.
I don't suppose there are very many Irish people of a certain age anyway, probably 30 years and over, who weren't taught by a religious order, be it a Christian brother, a priest or a nun. And the reason that I am saying that is because one of the orders of nuns that would have taught a lot of Irish girls would have been the Presentation Sisters. And it was a lady by the name of Nano Nagel that set up the Presentation Sisters many years ago. And there's a new book after being published called Nano Nagel, The Life and the Legacy. And it was co-authored by Deirdre Rafferty, Katrina Delaney and Catherine Nolan Roebuck. And Catherine joins me on the phone this evening. Catherine, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm in top form, I'm glad to say, and thank you very much for talking to us this evening on the programme. Now, Nano Nagel, who is she and where is she from?
Nano Nagel is a Cork woman. She was born and raised in Cork in the 18th century. And the reason that we are so interested in her this particular year, 2018, is because this year marks the tercentenary of her birth, the year of her birth. We don't know date or anything like that, but it certainly marks the year of her birth. So she was a proud Cork woman who did extraordinary things during the course of her life, particularly in relation to, as you said, the education of girls.
Okay. Now, strangely enough, for a woman who would have had such an impact on the education system of the country, and indeed other countries, which we'll talk about in a minute, this is the first biographical study of Nano Nagel.
Well, not yes and no. It's the first biographical study as such. Members of the congregation over the years have put together wonderful pieces of work based on Nano and her life and her work. Clergymen have done it too. So what's a little bit different about this book, we hope, is that we have put her life together within the context of social history and who she was as a woman, and then what she did in relation to education, particularly in the 19th century when the congregation was getting up and established. So that is what we're looking at, which we believe hadn't been done up to this point.
All right. And did the three of you take a different aspect or a different part or a side of Nano Nagel's journey to focus on, or how did the three of you work together on the book?
We did, as it happens. It's been a long-term project, if you like, for us, really. I did a piece in terms of the education and the Presentation Sisters' involvement in education in 19th century Ireland. So that would be the section in the book that I have dealt with. Katrina had focused for her research on their involvement in second level education, and she focused more on the 20th century. However, her piece in the book relates significantly to their work and their foundations in England. She did also a piece on second level education from 1850 Deirdre then, Professor Raftery, what she focused on was the context in which Nan O'Nagle lived as a woman and grew up as a woman. So that's really how we had put it together, and hopefully we believe it works.
All right. And what are the main things that the book tells us about Nan O'Nagle's life prior to setting up the Presentation Sisters?
I suppose one of the things it tells us is that very little is known about her life.
Right. Yeah.
For a woman who has had such impact down through the years, what we know of her own life is limited really from documents. There's very few documents available from her own hand. There are a number of letters, 17, that she wrote to the first of the women who entered the Ursulines to establish the first successful foundation in Cork. And there are a number of letters that were written to Teresa Mullally. But if you consider that she was in her 60s when she died, and the only method of communication was by letter, then 17 is a very small return. We do know that she came from a wealthy background. She grew up in Ballygriffin down in Cork. And what we can do on the basis of that is to look at what we know of the times and what we know of what happened at the times for girls and women who were of her class in society and who came from the background that she came from. And that's what we've done in the book. We've looked at it on that basis.
Now, it has been described as not only a vital new biographical study of an exceptional Irish woman, but also a study of how thousands of Irish women joined the Presentation Order of Nuns and taught in their schools all over the world. And it talks about bringing together the female diaspora and how the Irish had an impact in educating people in Newfoundland and India and various other places. So that's obviously a huge part of it.
It is a huge part of it. In the 19th century, the Presentation Sisters established themselves in Ireland. However, from the end of the 18th century and into the 19th century, there was huge migration from Ireland to other countries, Australia, America, Newfoundland, the UK. So with them, they brought their religion. And the Presentation Sisters, along with other congregations, but the Presentation Sisters fairly early on, went out to work with Irish migrants who were Catholic and who needed their children to be educated. So the first foundation of Presentation Sisters that went abroad went to Newfoundland, as you said, in 1833, and they went from the convent in Galway.
Right.
And that foundation became a very successful foundation over time, even given the fact that they had very difficult circumstances at the beginning of their time there. But they gradually adapted and worked and persevered, I suppose, and developed a network of convents in Newfoundland themselves. There was also a foundation made in Manchester in England, which was in 1836. Another foundation went to California in 1854.
Right.
One went to Madras in India, as you said, in the 1840s, and in Australia in the 1860s. So they went where the Irish people went to begin with. They weren't trying to convert people who were not Catholics. They went to work with Catholic Irish people originally.
Okay.
Now, as it happens, these were centres where other countries' populations migrated to as well. So their work did involve working with other nationalities and other migrants, and that developed and evolved over the decades and the centuries. But that's where it started.
All right. And does the book look at the Presentation Sisters or the Order and the journey that that Order has taken and maybe where it is now?
We don't come into the 20th century. We made the decision really to focus on the years of the 19th century and the early 20th century, really because it hadn't been addressed in the way that we have addressed it before. And we feel that we need to lay down the foundations in terms of people following us in terms of research. So what we did was to focus on the early years, the 1775, when she founded the Presentation Sisters with her three colleagues, right up to the 20th century and their involvement, their early involvement in second level education in Ireland, and then the international foundations that they established during that time. So we have stayed really towards the early end of the congregation's history.
Right. And in relation to the three of you, Deirdre, Katrina and yourself, did all three of you come together and decide together to write this, or was it somebody's idea and others came along, or pieces were added, or what way did that come about?
It came about really in terms of marking this tercentenary of Nano's birth.
Yeah.
Deirdre, as Professor of the History of Education in UCD, had been engaging with the congregation in relation to the letters of Nano Nagel. And they have put together a collection of those letters, a digitized version of the letters, which is available to the public.
All right.
You just literally Google it up or go to the UCD Digital Library. So out of that, then, the project for the book was developed. So okay. One thing led to another.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did this for a while. And in many respects, as you said in your introduction, I'm of that certain age when I went to a convent school, and the convent school I went to was the presentations.
Oh,
so
nice.
It is that thing when you're dealing with people's stories, that stories interconnect, and when you pull one little thread, another thread comes tumbling out. So it is that type of thing that when you're writing other people's stories, in many respects you're writing about your own story and your own background and where you got to from to get here.
So, yeah. And having been a presentation girl, as we'll call you, and now researching and writing about the founder of the order, did you see any similarities between the order that you would have come across going to school and the order that was set up?
I was a presentation girl up until the 70s, the late 70s.
Right.
So I think that they had remained very consistent and very true to Nano's mission.
Right.
And the core of her mission was the education of girls, poor girls. How that developed over the 20th century and indeed after her death. But they focused on that and they developed that, and they certainly stayed with her mission. So, yes.
Good. Good. And I won't delay you much further, but I'm interested to ask these questions. Who is the book for? Who is going to read it?
Well, the book is for anybody who is interested in it, really, and who may see it in any one of the bookstores or online.
Right.
And think, well, that's something that appeals to me.
Yeah.
We have written it with research in mind, and we have written it with documentary evidence and all the rest of that. But we would hope that for anyone who is interested in where systems of education came from, where women religious became involved, how they became involved, how their convents and their schools were established. Anyone who's interested in that,
great.
It's for them.
All right. Now, it's available online, I presume, for our Spanish listeners. And is it through Amazon and various other places?
Yes, indeed it is, Chair.
All right. Yeah. And if you're in Ireland, you can walk down to the local bookstore. It's available now.
Well, it is indeed. So we're delighted that it's out, and hopefully people will enjoy it if they buy it.
Great. And it would make a lovely Christmas present.
Yes, indeed. Santa would.
He'd be delighted to deliver it. Well, listen, it's been lovely talking to you, Catherine, and finding out a little bit about Nano Nagel, because I went to school with the Christian Brothers in Limerick in Ireland, and right next door to us we had a presentation school, so I got to know plenty of the presentation girls there. It seemed like a jolly nice place to be.
Yeah. Well, they were very connected. Edmund Rice was involved with the Presentation Sisters and their foundation in Waterford at the
Was
start.
He?
Yes, indeed, he
I
was.
I didn't know that. Well, there you go. So that's another connection. All right, Catherine, we wish you well with the book. Thank you very much for talking to us this evening, and enjoy the rest of the evening.
Thank you very much, Chair, for having the book on the show. We appreciate it.
My love is in America, and I miss him tonight. So much so, I feel like taking the money we've saved and catching the flight. And catching the flight. The children are asleep in bed, and and I'm on my own. Even though I've read his letters again and again, I'm alone. I'm all alone.
But the money I send home is barely enough. There's an ocean that keeps us apart. I've been lonely for home, but I mustn't give up.
What about this aching heart? Johnny, come home, I need you tonight. I need you tonight. But it's hard to go out just because certain assumptions are made when your man's not about. When your man's not about. My love is in America, and I'm not so sure.
That keeps us apart. I've been aching for home, but I mustn't give up.
What about this aching heart? Johnny, come home. I need you tonight. I need.
Beautiful song, isn't it? It comes from Dolores Cain and Mick Hanley, and My Love is in America. We are taking a very quick break. After that, I will be telling you about some famous Irish birthdays, playing some music for you. And of course, Peter will join us in the next part of the programme as well to talk to us about Ireland and Brexit.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, some famous Irish birthdays. And normally we have at least one musical birthday in there that I can kind of choose a song from that person. But no, not today. Not for this week, to be honest with you. No birthdays of interest for today. But tomorrow, the 6th of November, Johnny Giles, former Irish footballer, now journalist and commentator. Well, I wouldn't say commentator exactly, but yeah, he's a panellist on a lot of the soccer shows back in Ireland. He was born in Dublin the 6th of November. Tomorrow, 1940, he celebrates his 78th birthday. I didn't realise he was that age, but there you go. And still fit and hale and hearty, thankfully. Thursday of this week is the 8th of November. Bram Stoker, he of Dracula fame, novelist, was born in Clontarf in Dublin in 1847. And if, like me, you grew up in the 1970s in Ireland watching the news, because we only had one TV station in the 1970s, and the news was read by a number of people. like Don Coburn and Charles Mitchell, and there was an O'Doherty there, wasn't there? Morris O'Doherty, that's what it was. But anyway, Charles Mitchell was one of those iconic newsreaders. He was born on the 8th of November back in 1920. He was an actor as well as a newsreader. I think that's the background to him going to RTE. Friday, the 9th of November, the screenwriter Hugh Leonard would have been celebrating his birthday, born in 1926 in Dublin. And Saturday, we have three birthdays of note. Saturday is the 10th of November. Oliver Goldsmith, the novelist, was born in Ballymahon in 1730. Patrick or Padraig Pearse was born in Dublin in 1879, a well-known writer and indeed one of the rebels from 1916 as well. And Mick Lally, the actor who acted in a lot of stage productions but latterly became known as Miley from Glenroe. He was born on the 10th of November 1945. Unfortunately, Mick, no longer with us, died at a very young age a number of years ago. Sunday is the 11th of November, and if you're from Kilkenny, you'll know your hurling and you'll love your hurling. And two great Kilkenny stars share a birthday on Sunday next. DJ Carey was born in Goran in County Kilkenny in 1970, so he celebrates his 48th birthday next week. And one of the finest Irish hurlers ever, as indeed was DJ, Eddie Kerr, was born in Inishleague in County Kilkenny in 1941, making him 77 years of age this coming Sunday. So there we have it, some Irish birthdays for you. None of them associated with music, so we're just going to take this lovely track from a man by the name of Passenger. He's got a very unusual voice, but here's a lovely song. It's called He Leaves You Cold. It is Talk Radio Europe, and it is the Irish programme, live on air.
Standing on your doorstep, my love. So aren't you gonna invite him in? Well, isn't he everything you want? Oh no, I forgot, you want everything. Well, your mum, she says he's the perfect catch. And your dad, he tells you you're the perfect match. But I know he leaves you cold. He leaves an ice cube in your heart and a snowflake in your soul. I know, I know, I know that he leaves you cold. Him tapping on your window, my love. But you're pretending that you're not there. But he's in your car parked outside. Oh no, you forgot to turn the lights off upstairs. Well, your friends, they tell you he's watching me. How would they know what you mean? But I know he leaves you cold. You leave an ice cube in your heart and a snowflake in your soul. I know, I know, I know that he leaves you cold. Well, I know that you're lonely. He's around, but my love, he's not the only game in town.
A beautiful song from Passenger, a song called He Leaves You Cold. There we have it. Let's go to serious matters now, shall we? Peter O'Dwyer is the senior business reporter for The Times Ireland, and he joins us on the phone now to talk to us about what's been happening over the last week, particularly the last 24 hours in relation to Ireland and Brexit. Peter, good to talk to you. Welcome to the programme.
Thanks, sir.
A lot of confusion over the weekend. Talks about backstop being there for 3 months. Talks about the entire UK being involved in the customs union. Can you decipher it for us?
To a certain degree, it's quite like a lot of this process has been where you look, it looks as if there might be a breakthrough of some sort, and then there's a bit of a dampener put on it. So in yesterday's Sunday Times, as you were saying, there was a pretty extensive report which said that a bare bones of a deal had been agreed between Theresa May and the EU, and that was going to include a UK-wide customs deal which would keep the UK as a whole tied to the customs union for an unspecified amount of time. There wasn't any sense given in the piece as to how long that would be. It also suggested that while the Irish backstop would obviously remain in some shape or form, that there would be an exit clause in that, so that essentially the UK could decide if and when it wanted to break out of that. It's this kind of idea of the backstop being time limited that we've heard about before. Mm. And most tellingly, maybe, there was a quote from what was described as a senior UK official, and he was kind of reeling off all the different elements of the deal, you know, customs union, UK-wide success, backstop concession success. He's reading all of these different things and kind of saying success afterwards, which is a little unusual, but he finished it with the quote of Ireland is effed in this deal. So that gives you an insight into how at least some of the officials close to May were thinking. They thought it was very successful from the UK's point of view, and it wouldn't be so successful from the Irish point of view.
Now that you've kind of told us what's there, what has been the reaction from maybe Simon Coveney, or has Leo Varadkar come out? You know, where is it at?
No, we haven't heard anything from the Taoiseach as of yet. He has seemingly left it to Coveney to respond to this. He did so yesterday. We're reporting this morning that he essentially put the coolers on it a little bit, kind of reiterated his point of view that they were close enough to a deal, but he said that they weren't there yet. His spokesman said that the article really seemed to be aimed to a UK audience. So it was a piece that ran in both the UK edition of the Sunday Times, but also in the Irish one. He was kind of cautioning that if it seemed to be directly aimed at a UK audience.
Okay.
And he described it as a running commentary, which wasn't particularly helpful. So that was kind of putting the dampener on a little bit. And just this morning then, Simon Coveney himself tweeted saying that the Irish position had been consistent and clear the whole way through, nothing had changed, and that position was that a time-limited backstop, or one that the UK could decide to unilaterally end, would never be accepted by Ireland or the EU. I suppose one of the joys of Twitter is that things are quite concise, so that was straight to the point. I think, as we discussed last week or maybe the week before, I think there is a willingness on the EU's side to discuss the idea of the customs union extending to the whole of the UK.
Right.
I think they're willing to do that in the next stage, so long as the Irish backstop, as was agreed in December and in March again, but they do seem to be adamant to do that.
Is this a kite-flying exercise by Theresa May or by parts of the British government to see what the reaction might be to their latest thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably an effort on the UK government side to try and placate some of the people that you need to get on side to get a deal through Parliament. The DUP would be chief amongst those people. They would obviously like the idea of no divergence between Northern Ireland and the UK. So they like that idea. They'd like the idea that any backstop that would be signed up to the UK could get itself away from it whenever it liked by doing so unilaterally. So I think it is an effort to placate the DUP. As I said, I don't think Ireland and the EU will swallow any compromise on the Northern Ireland backstop. I think there is a willingness to discuss the UK-wide customs union. The issue that you get into, though, even if this deal, as was presented, were to be agreed, which I don't think it would, but you have to remind yourself what that would mean. It would tie the UK to the EU indefinitely.
Right.
That would essentially mean that the UK would still be playing by the EU's rules in an awful lot of senses. And it would limit the scope for them to strike free trade deals with other nations. So that certainly isn't going to wash with the hard Brexiteers. So we're back to the same old situation that was trying to placate the DUP on one side, then she's get a backlash from the other side with the hard Brexiteers. If she tries to placate them, you know, you can see where she is. It's where she's been for a long time. So while things do seem to be edging a little further, maybe, towards some sort of, again, just a compromise or a fudge deal, if this deal, as was outlined, were to be agreed, she'd still have a big backlash from some people in the UK.
All right. Peter O'Dwyer, the senior business reporter with The Times Ireland, thank you, as always, for joining us. And we look forward to catching up with you next week on the programme.
Cheers, sir.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era.
The very first interview that we did on Live on Era was with the current ambassador, Irish ambassador to Spain, Sheila Maguire. I'm glad to say that we're joined now on the telephone by a former Spanish ambassador to Ireland, a gentleman by the name of José Antonio Iturriaga. And Ambassador, thank you very much for joining us on the programme this afternoon or this evening. It's lovely to talk to you, and thank you for taking time out. Now, you were ambassador to Ireland from 1987 to 1991.
Yes.
Have you fond memories of your time in Ireland?
Well, I have a wonderful memories. It was my best post in my long diplomatic career.
And how did it come about that you became the ambassador to Ireland for Spain?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps it was as a prize, because before I was ambassador in Iraq at the moment. Not very nice in the war between Iraq and Iran.
Yeah.
So I think that was perhaps a prize. And also there was any influence, the fact that I had a great-grandmother who was an Irish lady, Clancy.
Oh, Clancy.
So this influenced.
And where in Ireland does she come from, or did she come from?
From Limerick, yes, County Limerick. Yes.
County Limerick. Oh, lovely, okay. So when you came to Ireland in 1987, what expectations did you have of the country?
I knew Ireland because I had been as a student. I've been in University College, Dublin, one summer, so I knew Ireland, doing, by the way, a course on Irish civilization, which was very, very instructive for me. So I knew Ireland, I knew many friends. So for me, it was just go to a place we already I knew
right.
quite well. So my main purpose was to improve the relations between the two countries, which were very good in theory, but had very few in the practice. There was not much contact. So I tried to develop at the utmost the relationship between the two countries, especially in the cultural field, because being both Spain and Ireland members of the European Union, the economic and political relations were done through the European Union. So the ambassadors have not much saying in this respect, but in the cultural field there was a lot to do, and that was my main activity during this period, especially to try to develop the teaching of Spanish in Ireland.
Right. Now, you would have been familiar with a certain amount of culture, so did you have an understanding and a grounding on our literature, our music? Were you familiar with those?
Yes, I was familiar with the history of Ireland, with the great tradition of the Abbey Theatre, the wonderful drama school of Dublin, and the history. And it happened that 1 year after I arrived in Dublin, it was the anniversary, 500th anniversary of the Spanish Armada.
Ah.
That was an occasion for me to try to make to as much as possible as to make the Irish people to understand what happened at that period, because they had a vision given partially by the British. With the cooperation of many institutions in Spain, I managed to organize an exhibition on the Armada and on the literature, the music, all the what was surrounding that period of Spain, the Spain of Philip II. Also, in my research, I came through a wonderful letter written by one of the survivors of the Armada,
right.
Captain de Cuellar, Francisco de Cuellar, who sank in Strelitz precisely, and he managed to cross all Ireland in very, very difficult conditions. And went to Northern Ireland, from there he crossed to Scotland and managed to return to Spain.
Yes.
And he described all his wonderful adventures in a letter written in 1589 to a friend, in which he described wonderfully the situation in Ireland, the people, the traditions. So it was really one of the most interesting experiences in my life to rediscover this letter. And then we made Mayo Street one of the center of the commemoration of the Armada, Spanish Armada in Ireland, because 26 ships from the Armada sank in the Irish coast.
Yes.
So there are monuments, commemorative monuments all throughout the island.
That's right.
Perhaps the most important was the one in Strada, in Sligo, which in commemoration of the people, the sailor who sank in that day, of three ships, and it was inaugurated by President Hillary. I accompanied him. There were also monuments in Donegal, in Kinnego Bay, for the ships Trinidad Valenzuela, also in Dunshine, sorry about my pronunciation of these names, in Kerry, to Santa Maria de la Rosa, and many other places. We, by my initiative, they made a touristical route of Captain de Cuellar, how he crossed the whole of Ireland. On the same occasion, took Irish composer, made special compositions. One was precisely Nights in the Garden of Clare by Michael O'Sullivan.
Yes, Michael O'Sullivan, Michael O'Sullivan,
based on a poem by Paul Duncan. And also another one, Irish Letter, a cantata by Seoris Bolly, inspired also in the Cuellar's letter.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Dr. Patrick Hillary, who was President of Ireland for 14 years, and when you took up your post, you would have presented your credentials to President Hillary at Áras an Uachtaráin. Now, the previous year, King Juan Carlos paid a state visit to Ireland and met with Patrick Hillary. And Patrick Hillary came from a place called Spanish Point in County Clare, and King Juan Carlos visited the president in his hometown, didn't he?
Yes. In fact, when I presented my credentials to Dr. Hillary, he mentioned the fact that he was born in Spanish Point. He invited me and my wife to visit the home city, and then we inaugurated there a small monument to remember the visit of King Juan Carlos to Spanish Point.
Lovely. If I'm told correctly, and I'm sure I am, because Jose Antonio Sierra, our cultural correspondent, told me that you had presented a talk in Limerick about Kate O'Brien, the author.
Well, yes, there was another of my discoveries in my stay in Ireland. This lady, who has been in Spain in her youth.
Yes.
In fact, he was a sort of the nanny or the teacher, English teacher, of a gentleman who afterwards became Minister of Foreign Affairs of Spain, José María de Arelza.
Okay.
In fact, I invited Ambassador Arelza to give a lecture in one of the in Limerick. One of these every year there was a celebration in commemoration of that lady.
When you were ambassador for the 5 years that you were in Ireland, did you manage to cover a lot of the ground and see a lot of the country?
Well, I think there is not a single place in Ireland where I had not been. yes, I really enjoy. And then, I used to accept any invitation that I received, were very many, from the President of the Republic to the mayor of a little village called Dunshine, where we celebrate teacher of the little school, organize also a commemoration event of the Spanish Armada.
Lovely.
And all the celebrations were in Irish and Spanish. no English at all. Right. So when it came to my turn of delivering my speech, I said that I'm sorry I couldn't speak in Gaelic, but I have learned during my period of student in Ireland a song in Gaelic, so I sang the song.
Did you? What song is that?
I was very successful.
And what song is that?
Bolarihu. Bolarihu, 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 dolahari.
Here you go, that's lovely. Since you've left Ireland, have you missed it?
Yes, very much. But funny enough, I have not returned since I left Ireland. Every year I send some of my grandchildren to study in Ireland, but now I have one on them.
Right.
But my wife, who also enjoy very much her stay in Ireland, have the theory that she doesn't want to go back to a place where she was very happy in case anything goes wrong. So it has prevented me to return as she would have liked to Ireland.
Right. And did you enjoy the weather?
Well, that's the only thing I didn't like much in Ireland. The weather, and I would say also that the food.
You didn't like the food?
No, it was very much very, very, very different from the Spanish and the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, it would be, very much so. It was lovely talking to you, Ambassador. It sounds like you had a lovely time in Ireland, and I'm glad that your wife had a lovely experience here, and glad to hear that your great-grandmother is from Limerick as well, a Clancy. There may be some Clancys listening, you'd never know. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today, and we wish you well in the future.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sweeney.
That was former Ambassador José Antonio I. Torriaga, who was the Spanish ambassador to Ireland from 1987 to 1991.
When I first heard Tommy Macon and the Clancy's my future it was seen, I was bitten by the ballad bug, ever since the wound is never healed. When I got my first guitar, my fingers bled until I learned a chord or two. I pulled on me iron sweater, I wrote me mom a goodbye letter, started throwing shapes up in O'Donoghue's. I've played every lounge in Ireland, from Dingle right up to Donegal. I've sung Nancy Spain on stages where no other ballad singers play at all. From the rising sun in Brownstown to the Blue Lagoon with the river in Sligo Town, Ballymurphy and the Bogside, Balnamore and once in Balnasloe. If I get an encore, I go home feeling like a king. It's a two-way situation, I get a lot of pleasure when I sing. I play Cabaret in Bundoran and Marquise for Father Horton, and I once stood in for Johnny McAvoy. From Berlin to San Francisco, I've gone on before the disco, lashing out the four green fields of Athenry. Mount Bellevue was like Porgatree, but Tulsk was just like Binninghall. I've received my education in the lounges of this nation. After 25 years, I'm doing well. If I get an encore, I go home feeling like a king. It's a two-way situation, I get a lot of pleasure when I sing. I was playing in the meeting place when half the special branch came through the door, and they were looking for the outlaw, stole their trousers back in 1984. They started listening to my songs and they hung around till after the show. If I ever need a taxi blade or a massage at a special way, them's the boys who tell me where to go. If I get an encore, I go home feeling like a king. It's a two-way situation, I love to play my old guitar, and I get a lot of pleasure when I sing.
I suppose I won't be getting an encore this evening, but there you go. It's one of those ones that's good to play at the end of the programme. Christy Moore and a fabulous song called If I Get an Encore. Great song. Right, so that's my lot for today. I hope that you enjoyed the programme as much as I enjoyed putting it together and presenting it to you. As always, don't forget the contact details, GER, G-E-R, at talkradioeurope.com if you would like to email for any reason. You can hear the programme back again, or you can tell your friends to listen back to it if you like in about 20 minutes or thereabouts on the website. This programme will be loaded in its entirety onto our playback feature. Look after yourselves now in the coming week. Can I say thank you, as always, to Jose Antonio Sierra, who is our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant on the programme and does a lot of work beavering away in the background to find items that he thinks would be of interest to you and to me and to many others as well. So thank you, Jose Antonio. Thank you to my colleagues here at Talk Radio Europe for the continued support and promotion of the programme. And most of all, thank you for listening. Look after yourselves. Have a great week. Going to finish with this lovely song from Noel Shine and Mary Green. It's a song called This Old Train. From me, Ger Sweeney. Until next week. Bye-bye.
She used to go to Ireland's edge, silver lines to run along. Now we want to climb aboard, but this old train is gone. This train is gone. This train is gone. This old 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 train is gone. And Kilkee. This train is gone. This train is gone. This old 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 train is gone. Train is gone. This train is gone. This train is gone. This old 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 train is gone.